Welcome back. Guys, I started playing a game recently that's been out sort of in various forms for a while, but this game is called Minecraft. Have you guys ever heard of it?
Mm-mm. Yep.
So one yes and one no. So
no, we've never heard of it.
Has some sort of like Heisenberg uncertainty principle whether or not the couple knows about it. So what this game is basically it's basically the two parts of the compound name are mining and crafting. And so basically what this means is you dig up blocks of earth or stone or whatever, and then you use that to build structures like castles or bridges or tunnels or whatever. So basically it's kind of laid out by this, like a giant cube, like the world is in a sort of giant cube shape where it's like subdivided into like thousands of smaller cubes, and each cube is like a particular resource, like it'll be dirt or a tree or like stone, water, stuff like that. And so basically you start off the game and you don't have any tools or anything. So you start off the game and all you have are like your bare fists. And, the only way you can interact with the world at this point is by sort of punching things or digging at things with your bare hands. And so, I think a big part of the game is sort of like exploration and sort of figuring out how things in the game work. So, the first thing I did is I went up to a tree and started punching it until the block of, or the tree trunk, which was a block of wood, basically broke, and I picked it up. And you can sort of go into like a little miniature inventory thing, and you can split that wood into planks, and then you can split the planks into like sticks. And once you have sticks, you can create a wooden pickaxe. And so once you have the wooden pickaxe, you can sort of start mining stuff, and or at least mine stuff a lot faster than you could with your bare hands. So like,
right.
I had created this this pickaxe, and I'm like mining stuff and basically digging a big pit. once you dig up like ground or whatever, you can sort of take that block and place it anywhere in the world, as long as it's attached to another block on one of its faces. So you can start making like structures out of the stuff that you've mined. And it's around this point in the game, after I'd first started, that there's like a day and night cycle. So basically, like every 20 minutes or so, it cycles from daytime to nighttime and then back again. And at night, monsters come out. These are like zombies, or there's like skeletons too. And there are these like, giant spiders. and like the freakiest things are these, they're like basically exploding zombies. If they get close to you, they explode and like take out a huge amount, like a huge chunk of the countryside with them. It's basically an instantaneous kill. And so like the first night that came, I died pretty much immediately. So like the second day I spent basically trying to build a house to keep the monsters out at night. So it's like this really weird, really interesting mix of like during the daytime, like adventuring out and like gathering resources. And then at nighttime you're like huddled in your house sort of fearful of going outside. But that's kind of how the game starts out, and then towards, I don't know, the second or third day, you start to get a hang of sort of the mechanics, and it's really a game about, exploration and building stuff. which was really super cool. So, like, I started off in my, the house that I built the second day turned into basically a big castle. Cause you can dig down pretty deep. Like, you can dig down, like way past sea level. And you'll start finding things like stone, which you can mine to create cobblestone. You can build things, like you can build a furnace, where you can bake the cobblestone into like a solid piece of stone. You can also, cook or like burn wood into charcoal. And you can, take a stick and a piece of charcoal and make a torch. And the torches keep the enemies away. So at night you can like go outside as long as you like surround your castle or your house with torches. It's basically just super cool. Like, the way you combine things to make other items, is really sort of intuitive. like to make a pickaxe, you take two sticks, put them together, and then, across the top to form a T, you can put like other sticks, or if you want to make a stronger pickaxe, you can put like iron bars there, to make an iron pickaxe. So like everything that you're creating sort of looks like the item, when it's after it's been crafted. So I've basically been obsessed with this game for the past, almost 24 hours now. And I've, basically, I started out and like I told you, I built this sort of house that turned into a castle. And then rather than venturing outside, I decided to dig down, like form a basement under it. Mm-hmm. And, basically I hollowed out a pretty big chunk of area directly below my house. And then I decided to sort of venture out into another direction. So I built like this huge tunnel. And then occasionally I would like dig up to the surface and create like a little, like an outpost, like a rampart with a door to keep the enemies out. And then finally I noticed like in the distance, this big hill. Or a group of hills. And so I climbed up to the top of the hills and decided to make my new home on the top of this hill, on the top of the tallest hill. And, it's just really cool. Cause like you can see super far in the distance too. So from my old castle, I could look up onto the top of this hill that seems like maybe it was, like half a mile away or a mile away. And just like this giant, I built a giant tower on top of the hill. So it like totally eclipses everything that's around it. It like goes up to cloud level. And there's like, you can see the torches from anywhere. So like at night, it looks really cool. You can see my giant tower in the distance with torches all around it. And it seems like every hour or so, I have this aha moment. Where something else clicks and I'm like, oh, that's so cool, I can do that. but anyway, I probably shouldn't keep rambling on and on about this.
Well, so how can you win the game or beat the game, or does it just go on forever?
So my understanding is that you can beat the game, but I have no idea how you would do it. So I've traveled to like tons of different places so far in my world. Like basically when you start the game, it randomly generates the world for you. So mm-hmm. No two games are ever going to be the same. Like the hills will be in different places. The hills will have like natural caves inside them. There's lava lakes. So like I was, digging a tunnel to connect my old castle with my new castle. I just basically dug a tunnel like straight through it, straight through the ground all the way to it. And at one point I sort of broke through a wall and I was looking down onto a giant lake of lava. And later on in the game I was sort of digging straight through and I accidentally broke a wall that caused lava to start spilling out into my tunnel. And basically, as soon as lava touches you, you die. But but fortunately, the lava moves pretty slowly, so you can sort of quickly put like a stone wall up to block the lava from from destroying the rest of the stuff that you've built. But yeah, I mean, it's just really crazy how diverse everything in the game is, even though it looks really, like, everything's really blocky. So, the blocks are like 1 meter by 1 meter by 1 meter cubed. Mm-hmm. And you can basically remove and place blocks one at a time. So everything has a super blocky look to it. Like the hills, if you look right up next to them, it just looks like a collection of, of cubes. But like from a distance, everything has sort of like a natural curve to it. It's just, like I said, super blocky. So like, I don't know if you remember like Nintendo games where all the characters have kind of a blocky look to them.
Yeah.
It sort of looks like that except in 3D. But yeah, as far as I can tell, getting to the end, is a mystery. there are like achievements that you can unlock in the game. One is called the end question mark and one is called the end period. So I'm assuming that at some point there is like a condition that you can meet to beat the game. But I think that's probably not the main point of playing. I think it's really just like, here's a world you can explore, and it's almost like playing with Legos, where you can kind of build anything you want. You can, you know, stack blocks on top of each other, next to each other. I don't know, Josh, if you've seen any, like, videos or pictures of things that people have made in Minecraft, but it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I've seen some, like, people do, like, models of, like, Star Trek ships or stuff like that, or
right,
or models of like you know, famous buildings and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, it's super cool. It's like $27 if you buy it on the computer, and I'm pretty sure it'll run on most computers because it's not very like graphically intensive or anything. But yeah, it's super fun. If you ever have the itch to go back and play with Legos, but maybe don't want to spend, you know, hundreds of dollars building a collection of, you know, Lego blocks, then, this is a cheaper and I don't want to say cooler, but, it's definitely a cool way to sort of get that same experience. So.
I like the idea of an adult having a Lego collection. Like a massive Lego collection.
Yeah, like if you were a kid and you had the money of an adult, you could just buy all the Legos you want.
Yeah, if I was a kid and had like an unlimited supply of Legos, my room would probably look a little bit like Legoland.
Well, I think you've probably convinced me to start doing Minecraft now.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I haven't gotten into like the multiplayer aspect of it, but apparently you can like have like other people sort of join your world and all work together to like That's mine cool. and build stuff. I don't know how it works on the Xbox 360 because that version just came out like this past week.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it works similar to how it works on the PC.
I might just get it on PC and then.
Hey,
I'm
yeah,
sure
if you do,
more people are on that. So.
if you get it, we should totally play together. I'll start up a server or something, and we can start working together. But man, I think I feel like I'm going to be playing this game for a really long time.
I always like that in a computer game. Like so many of them, and you know. You spend a couple hours, and then that's it. You've done what you were supposed to do, and, you know, it just feels like pretty much unsatisfying, I guess.
Yeah, and this game, like, you start off, and you literally have no instructions. Like, you get a prompt on your screen that says, press E to go to your inventory. And then from that point on, there's basically nothing. And man, there's just so much stuff that you can do, and like so much stuff that you can make with the materials that you find. And like I said, it's like literally like once an hour, something like totally cool and unexpected will happen that just makes me want to be like, or like the first time that I baked cobblestone into like actual stone, like solid stone. I was like, oh man, now I have to like destroy my whole castle and rebuild it out of the stone, because I had made it out of cobblestone before, but the solid stone looks so much cooler because it's like it's flat on all sides and it's like a uniform white color. But yeah, like towards like at this point, I have like you have sort of an inventory and you can sort of keep 64 of any type of resource in one inventory slot. and you have like 20 or 30 slots that you can carry on your person. So you can carry a huge number of these blocks at any given time. But I was at the point after I had connected my two castles where, my inventory was basically just completely full of blocks. And so I started just sort of throwing them away. But anyway, I guess I'm rambling again. but yeah, Josh, if you get the game, let me know and I'll see what I can do to like set up a server so we can play together. And Melanie, if it sounds interesting to you too, it would be really cool to have more people join. So
I was just thinking, what if in real life you had a Lego room and you put like glued Legos to your walls and ceiling and floors, and then you could attach anything, any other Legos to them.
That would be cool. You could put those, you know, like the big green flat space that's supposed to be like grass or whatever.
Yeah.
So basically you had that like as your wallpaper.
Or you could make like pictures on your wall out of Legos.
Yeah, this is what we're gonna do in our house.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah,
you should for your baby's room, you should totally do that, but just put it like slightly out of reach so that, you know, it's a choking hazard when babies are young, but then like right. Maybe at like age 3 when he's tall enough to reach it, he can start just like playing around with them.
Yeah.
Well, you could start with those big Lego blocks.
Right.
Like the ones like, that you can't swallow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have to be pretty big to swallow them. So. But at that point, I think the idea is that you know better.
Right.
Yeah, this is a great idea.
You should, like, if you had it from the ceiling, you could, like, create, like, like stalactites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you could build a fort.
You could build a fort.
Yeah. I think if you're doing that, you probably would want to use the bigger Lego blocks.
It
simply
would take
because
a lot of tiny
yeah,
ones.
Yeah. It would take forever to do that with regular Legos.
Do those? Yeah. I feel like maybe if you get the actual Lego brand that of the big block and the little blocks, I feel like they can be combined. Like maybe they're the right dimensions where you can put the bigger ones on top of the little ones, but I might be making that up.
That you mean like, cool, but like maybe four holes on a bigger or on a smaller one would fit into one hole of the big one.
Yeah. Something like that.
And then it's been a long time since I've had Legos, but you may be right.
If you had on the top of the big ones, more for like small holes again, like small pegs, so that you could build on top of them. Then you could interchange them, and you could use
you'd need
big
like
blocks when you need a lot of, you know, take up a lot of space.
That would probably be a fairly lucrative job or a lucrative company if you made like conversion blocks between the two.
Yeah, it's like, you don't have to throw out all your old big blocks just because your kids grew up. I'm going to look into that.
Now I think I might be jealous of you guys having a kid. Because you guys are going to have all the cool toys.
I'm pretty sure this is one of the main reasons that at least men have kids.
Well, Kyle, when you come and visit, you can play with our kids' toys.
and also the kid, if you want.
Yeah, I was going to say. I was going to say, do I have to play with the kid, or can I just make stuff out of your Legos?
Uncle Kyle stole my toys.
I hate Uncle Kyle.
Every time he comes, I have less Legos. Fewer Legos.
I was going to say, and at which point we would correct him and say fewer.
Yeah, your child is going to know the difference.
Speaking of grammar corrections, we finally got around to starting to watch Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
And we're all caught up now.
all through the current season?
Yeah. And they have several instances in that show where they correct each other's grammar.
Oh, really?
It may happen more in the second season than in the first, but
yeah, I feel like that's true.
Yeah, I still haven't watched the any of the second season yet. But what did you guys think of the first season? I'm assuming you liked it, otherwise you wouldn't have powered through.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
We thought it was awful, but we couldn't stop. I thought it was kind of like it didn't feel like a season. But I think that's true with a lot of like Showtime or HBO shows. Sometimes they feel quite a bit shorter than other.
Right. Yeah. With only like 12 episodes or something, like most like network TV shows, even like 1 hour dramas are like 20 to 26 episodes or something.
Yeah. But no, I think that's pretty good.
I liked it too. And I think Lauren watched the first episode with me and the last episode with me. I think she decided to start reading the books after she saw the last episode. One thing that made me sort of not super inclined to read the books is that there's, and this probably says something about me, is that there's not like a ton of magical stuff that happens in the show. Like there's definitely like supernatural or magical stuff that happens, but it's not really about that.
Right.
It's more about sort of the politics and the character relationships and stuff, which for me, like, I don't want to read like 5,000 page books of nothing but like politics stuff, but I'll definitely watch, you know, 12 1-hour episodes of that.
Yeah. I feel like you can, it's one of those where, you know, visual medium is perfect for, you know, it'll take you 10 pages to describe who knows what and, you know, the sort of meaning behind a certain look. But when it's on a show, you know, it's about 2 minutes or something like that.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I think there's a little more sort of magical stuff as it goes along. It seems like there's more of that in the second season.
Hmm. Yeah.
Never mind. I think I was gonna incriminate myself a little bit, so I decided not to.
Well, now you have to, because the listening audience demands it.
Well, I was just gonna say that you know, the means by which we have watched the second season does not include a subscription to HBO.
Right.
I'll say it that way.
Same with me, for the first season. If, I don't know, maybe we could start talking about this now, but if HBO offered a subscription fee to watch all their stuff online, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Like, if it was, like, $15 a month or $20 a month, and you got to watch all of the shows sort of on demand, or even movies, like, that would be cool, too. But mostly for their original programming is why I would want it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they have, I guess they have a complicated relationship with the cable providers, so the cable providers don't want you to to cut your cable and and buy stuff online, even though they're also selling you your online services. They want you to pay for it twice, I guess.
Yeah, I really think that we need to be a little more modern with the way we, you know, get our entertainment.
Right.
But yeah, there's so much money involved, I guess.
Well, you see this in other industries as well, like in the music industry, where for a really, really long time, it was hard to get music digitally. Even though the cost associated with, you know, producing something digitally is like almost nothing compared with like your traditional CDs buying from a retail outlet somewhere.
Yep.
For whatever reason, the music industry just was kicking and screaming until iTunes sort of took over and forced them out of their old ways. But it seems like any time there's a traditional model of where they're making money, they're too scared to do what the customers want and make it like convenient to get it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not certain why that is. I guess they're just too risk averse or something.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it is about losing control over like the means of distribution, that kind of thing. And fear of like, well, as soon as it goes digital, then that means that anybody can download it. They'll be able to get it for free.
Right.
Which is a risk, but I think the way to, you know, embrace that is not to try to keep people from doing that. Was that
Duke?
Yeah, Duke doesn't like the current model of entertainment either.
Yeah.
Which
I think that's kind of what happened with the music industry. It was like, you know, like you said, kicking and screaming until it's like, well, if we embrace this and find a way to actually use it to our advantage,
right? I feel like people are more inclined to spend money on something if it's convenient and easy and it doesn't come with a lot of restrictions.
Yeah.
Like, and then even if you price it more competitively, you're probably going to get a lot more people that end up buying it anyway.
Yeah.
Like when music was sold on iTunes for like 99 cents, you know, Apple really took off, especially with the, you know, combining that with their iPod sales. But I feel like, things are sort of starting to happen a little bit with TV and movies as well, with things like Netflix, but still Netflix is sort of being hamstrung by all the studios and the content producers, because they still want to make, you know, whatever they were making before, plus they want to add on like a convenience fee. they want to make as much money as possible from it, and really it's just inconveniencing people and sort of, I don't want to say it's necessarily turning people to piracy, but when pirating something is easier than buying it, and I'm not talking strictly about, you know, whether or not you can afford it.
Yeah.
But when I can download something and play it without having to worry about, like DRM restrictions, like whether or not my computer will actually be able to play this, I'm going to be more likely to just get the pirated version. And sometimes I've done this like, for some video games where, the game will have some sort of DRM in it, I'll buy it and it won't work because the DRM for some reason is causing problems. I'll just download the pirated version because somebody has gone through and removed all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which I don't pirate games that I haven't paid for, but, I can see why some people might do that. So. But yeah. I do, I guess I will, I'll also self-incriminate a little bit, like you, Josh. TV shows are a different story. And I feel like part of it is because I can DVR the thing. I'm already basically paying for it with my cable subscription.
Yes.
So if I happen to forget to DVR it, then I don't feel guilty at all about just downloading it.
Yeah, right. And the truth is, like you said, if you could just go online and watch it on demand, which would not be that big of a deal for them to do that, then you wouldn't have to do it a different way.
Right. The HBO thing is the only exception to that, where I download it even though I haven't paid for it. But I've been trying to get away from that. Like, when episodes become like available on iTunes or whatever, I might buy an episode for $2 or whatever. That's not a huge deal. It's just right. I want to be able to watch it when I want to watch it, and I don't want to have a subscription to something where I'm not going to watch like 80% of the stuff that's on it.
Yep. Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah, if you were allowed more control, you know, over what you were actually paying for, you know, with a typical cable subscription, in order to get the few channels you do want, you have to pay for, you know, like you said, 80% or whatever of all this other stuff you never even come close to watching.
Right. And I understand why, especially for a lot of smaller cable television channels, where that's good for them because, you know, their channel gets subsidized a little bit by everyone, sort of chipping in to pay for that stuff. But at the same time, like I'm not going to watch, basically I don't watch anything on my TV that's not in HD. So anything that's coming to me that's in standard definition might as well just be thrown away. They might as well just not even make that available to me. I can't watch standard definition stuff anymore after watching HD TV for so long. But then there's like all this other stuff, like the Home and Garden channel. I never watch that. I know that people watch that, but I never watch it. Like all of the channels that are aimed at like middle-aged to older women. Which I understand that lots of people watch that, but I never do. But there's no option for me to like pick and choose the stuff that I get.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I was just gonna say we actually do watch HGTV on a regular basis, but then you know there's all that other stuff that
right. Yeah. Watch, so. I guess the point isn't that nobody watches these channels. It's really just that I should be able to pick and choose what I want to watch. This is the day and age where if I want to watch something, I can go to YouTube and type a quick search and I can watch it. Or I can go to, you know, ABC's website and, you know, watch the shows there. It's just crazy that the cable still works the way that it does.
Yeah.
Well, and I think if actually no one is watching the shows, then they probably shouldn't be making the shows, you know?
Right.
It's not doing any good. Just, you know, I have access to something that no one ever sees. That doesn't do any good.
Right. It's just a waste of money. I mean, I guess that at a certain point, you know, if a channel has a really small but faithful following, then those people might be worth it might be worth it for those people to pay a little bit more to just to get that one channel.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't want it. So
there's this one show, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was basically produced. I think their motto was something like no network, no production company, something like that, no cancellation. And it's like this sort of satirical fantasy show. And they basically produced it as a sort of answer to things like shows being pretty popular and then getting canceled, like Community was brought back, but like Veronica Mars, a lot of people really liked that show and the network didn't like it, so it went away. And so they basically, you can watch it on YouTube. So it's in part supported through advertising through that, but then they also, I think for their second season, did a like Kickstarter project where people basically just, you know, donated money in order to produce the show, which I think is an interesting model. But I feel like their actual, like, their first season or half season was basically just, like, one full-length movie was all that they produced for it. But that's kind of cool idea.
Yeah, I like the idea of Kickstarter, that sort of crowdfunding a project, where maybe not all of the money comes from the funding on Kickstarter, but it's enough for them to get started, and then, you know, assuming that enough people are fans or donate money, you know, it gives it a better chance of them being able to sell it later to more people. So, yeah. I feel like that's a really interesting thing. We're probably going to see a lot more of that in the future. I wonder if we'll ever see, you know, the same level of professional quality stuff that we see on, like, network television.
Yeah.
From stuff like that.
I think Netflix has just released their first, like, Netflix-only show. And I don't remember what it's called. It's an instant download show that was produced just for Netflix subscribers.
So they're getting into content creation?
Yep. Or I don't know if it's produced by Netflix or if they're just funding it or what.
Huh. Well, that seems interesting. I like the idea of the way that content is created is sort of being diversified now into a bunch of other people's hands other than just, you know, the traditional outlets, which I think is only a good thing. Obviously, more competition is better for everyone. So, that kind of stuff I think is really cool. Okay, well, that was a long segment. let's go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back on Taekwondo and the Shame Chronicles.